You are listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and RadioReverb.com online. Welcome to the UK's only radio show about HRV and living a healthy life. It's the HRV Hour. You can contact us at hrv@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter and Instagram, HRV_hour. If you miss the show on a Thursday at 7 p.m, then you can listen again at 4 p.m. on a Monday and Tuesday at noon, or indeed catch up with an older show by going to the Listen Again page on RadioReverb.com. So, good evening to you both. How are you doing?
Not so bad. Yes. The week's going quickly, whizzing past. What about you, Tony?
Trying to organise stuff and get stuff done for Christmas. And yeah, that dreaded C word is coming up, isn't it?
Was it? What's that?
Cold.
Christmas.
Oh, was it? Oh, right, okay. Yeah, I don't talk about Christmas until the
20th. Oh, anyway, don't you? Okay.
I get called a humbug or a Scrooge or whatever it's called. I don't know. One of my favourite movies, actually. But anyway.
What, Scrooge?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
I love the Victorian version. Love it.
Yeah.
Takes me back to my childhood. And that's decades ago. Yeah.
Nah, it's not that long.
Have you been, Josh?
I'm all right, not too bad. We've got a special day today, isn't it? It's this week is World AIDS Day, isn't it? We're leading
it
up
is.
To it, and
yes.
Yeah. So I'm okay, not too bad.
Yes.
And yourself, Sue?
Yeah, been really busy. Obviously, all the charities are busy at the moment. The HIV organisations are all. And I know we've said this before. Everybody is doing everything different. But we're still doing what we need and what we should and what we can be doing, even though it's different. So slightly challenging because a lot of it's, what we're doing now for the radio, what we've been still being able to, which is great, put on a show. To our listeners, via Zoom and recordings. But it's been a bit of a year, and I think it'll go down in history, I think, to be honest.
Do you think? Yeah.
Oh, most definitely.
It's changed a lot of people's lives, hasn't it? And how we do things. And
yes.
Definitely.
Yeah. I was just reading, actually. It was only just yesterday. I don't know whether you read. It was Freddie Mercury's anniversary.
Ah, yes.
He was only, was it 49 or 45? I can't remember.
So how many years is it? 30 years?
I don't know. I mean, what? Oh, my goodness. It's just amazing. Can you imagine if you'd been still here today? Can you imagine?
Yes.
He would have been kicking ass, wouldn't he? I mean, honestly, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I just thought I'd share that because that's I know he'd done a lot of I did actually read when he died, the band donated the money from the Bohemian, because it was re-released, obviously, one of their famous soundtracks. They donated funds from the Bohemian Rhapsody, when they redone it, which was amazing, to HIV charities, which was amazing. So that was a fantastic start of the legacy, and a continuous start of the legacy. But yeah, thought I'd just mention that. I know we're obviously thinking and talking about World AIDS Day, so I thought I'd just be quite, right to mention Freddie.
And it's good to remember, isn't it? It's those people who've lost.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Just to say that the track at the beginning is Back to Love by Beyond Therapy and Andrea Love.
Oh, lovely. Right.
There's a love theme going on. This.
Oh, yes. I can feel it I can feel it in the air.
Yeah.
What's on the show then?
We have got a show, haven't we, Tony? We've got a delight. We've got, honestly, we've got so much on. I can't remember. You're going to have to remind us, Josh, what we've got on the show today. So much on.
Yeah, so I've done an interview with Glenn Stevens, who is involved in a Brighton project, which is more to me than HIV.
Yes.
So they're doing a virtual exhibition
on World AIDS Day. So just having a chat about that to him and what was involved and where it came from. He was inspired by last year's World AIDS Day at the, do you remember the library, Sue?
Yes, I remember that, yeah. Yes.
So got a great interview with him. And there's other things. You've done a couple of interviews.
Yes, I mean, we're going to be, I recently, just a couple of days ago, done a fantastic interview with someone called Jonathan Blake. Jonathan was one of the first diagnosed with HIV in the UK over 37 years ago. And it was such a long interview. We're calling it part one. On the show today, this week, and then we're going to be continuing the second part of Jonathan's story in a couple of weeks' time. But apart from he looks amazing for 71, you wouldn't think so. Yeah. But what he went through, and just one of the key things that came out of the interview was that he said to me, he said, "You know what, Sue? I was offered AZT." And right. I refused it. And he said he reckons in his heart that that saved his life, not taking it. But right. Hey, yeah, that was quite poignant when you said that. So, yeah, so he's going to be talking about the 80s, you know, when he was first diagnosed, when he literally thought he had only weeks to live. And he is now he's a campaigner, activist on many HIV organisations and still fighting for the cause of breaking down stigma. So, yeah, we're going to be airing part one of Jonathan Blake's story.
Right.
And sounds Tony, good. you've got an interview, haven't you?
I'm going to be speaking about Emily, who's a housewife in Bristol, and she found out just through a general checkup at the sexual health clinic. And she found out she was HIV positive. And I think it's really nice. The article goes into, you know, she was really shocked. She didn't expect it at all. And she's coping with it, and she's dealing with it really well. Yeah, it's a really positive story.
Good.
Yeah, it's really good.
That's good.
So there's some good stories. And you, again, you've got another story, haven't you? So another interview with, is it Martin Harris?
Yes, Martin Harris. Again, you know, as I say, we're marking World AIDS Day, not just for the Terence Higgins Trust. You know, we've got the Sussex Beacon, we've got Lunch Positive, all the HIV organisation, especially quite prominent ones that are in Brighton. But Martin Harris is just going to, we were just having a chat about World AIDS Day, how it's very different for all the HIV charities this year. And just saying that, you know, if people want to get involved in any type of fundraising, as little, you know, we find the little bits can create the biggest impact, you know. So yeah, we're just talking about a bit of fundraising, World AIDS, how we can come together and commemorate. So yeah, really interesting interview. Yes.
Radio Reverb.
Radio Reverb.
If you've just tuned in, this is the HIV Hour on 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and .com online. What a treat have we got for you today, guys. We have the amazing Jonathan Blake. Yes, he's laughing in the background, but I tell you what, it's an absolute pleasure. We've been able to pin Jonathan down. He does so much work in the HIV sector, and we're really lucky to get him in today, and what a story he's going to be telling you. Welcome, Jonathan.
Hello, Sue.
How are you today?
Oh, I'm good. Yeah. I'm really thrilled to be with you. I think this is amazing.
It is, and it's great that you're on the HIV Hour for the very first time, and hopefully this won't be the last time. But you know, we've got one of the biggest events of the year. We have many throughout the year, but we've got one of the biggest events of the year, and it's World AIDS Day. And I know that resonates with you quite a lot and within your story. Yeah. So, and I know, you know, you've come on today, not just to talk about World AIDS Day, but to talk about you, talk about your journey with HIV, talk about your story. So I'm just going to let you start, Jonathan, and just let you start on where you want to begin.
All right. Well, I mean, you know, in some ways, I think the best way to begin is at the beginning. And sort of, you know, I have been diagnosed since October 1982. And back in that, you know, those days, it was known as HTLV-3. You know, HIV didn't sort of get named as such. I think it was somewhere around about sort of 86, 87. You know, I'm old, so my memory is not quite as sharp as it used to be. But yes, so sort of back sort of in 1982, basically what had happened was that I had reached a point. I'd been out of work as an actor. I'd been working at Joe Allen's in Covent Garden, which was great because that was somewhere that whenever I was out of work as an actor, I was able to go and work there. So at least one was getting a little bit of sort of, you know, money to tide one over. But it reached a point that every single lymph node in my body had just erupted. And it was really painful. I had to stop working. I was walking like a gorilla. You know, the lymph nodes under the arms were up, the lymph nodes in the groin were up. So I really was sort of, you know, walking sort of, you know, bent legged. And it was incredibly painful. And I was living in the East End. So I made an appointment to go and see my GP. And I remember as I walked in, she got up and she said, "Shake my hand." And as I went to shake it, she felt the lymph node, which is sort of in the crook of my elbow. And I went, "Ow, what did you do that for? That's really painful." And she said, "That's the sailor's handshake." She said, whenever the sailors went into port, they would shake the hands of the women or the men they were going with. And if that lymph node was up, that was a sign of syphilis and they wouldn't go.
Wow.
So she said, "Have you had a syphilis test recently?" And I said, "Well, not recently." I said, "I've had syphilis, but you know, no, not recently." So she said, "I suggest that you go to the special clinic." So in those days, I went to the James Pringle House Clinic, which was part of the Middlesex Hospital on Charlotte Street. And I presented myself there and they were all over me. I mean, it was extraordinary. And they decided that they wanted to do a biopsy. So in those days, if you were queer, you were always put in a side ward. And I remember being in this side ward and there was only one other person in there. And that person was really, really, I mean, one could tell they were really ill and they were sort of not long for this world. And it suddenly dawned on me that I had met this person. I knew him. I had been out on tour back in 1976. I mean, this is going back.
Wow, it is.
1976. I'd been doing, working in Regent's Park at the Open Air Theatre. And we had done two shows. We'd done Othello with Robert Stevens and Edward Fox. And that had toured around Israel. And then we'd also done Love's Labour's Lost. And this was going to go to around the country. So we happened to be in Norwich. And this is where I had met this person. Anyway, they do the biopsy and they say, you know, it'll take a couple of days to get the results. So we want you to stay in the hospital. So that was that. So I'm lying there feeling really nervous about sort of the whole thing. And eventually the results come back. And I'm told I have a virus. They have nothing for me. It's incurable. And basically, that's it. They said, obviously, when the time comes, there will be palliative care. And thank you, and you can go home. I mean, I'm 33 years old. My life over. I mean, I was just completely winded. I really didn't know kind of sort of what to make of it. Now, it wasn't that I was sort of was unaware of what was happening. You know, I'd lived in New York in 1974 for 10 months, had an amazing time. So I had a lot of American friends. In 1981, a very dear friend of mine, Deborah, who was American, had got married. And she wanted all her London friends to come over and be ushers. So in the States, it seems to be the big thing that for Jewish weddings, you have ushers as opposed to bridesmaids. So I had gone. And what was lovely was that I had a very dear friend who I had lived with back in 1977 for a couple of years in London. And he had been headhunted. He had been in advertising and he was headhunted and he'd gone to live in San Francisco. So I could go and stay with him in San Francisco. I mean, it was perfect. Mm. And I've always loved bathhouses. So, and the Americans did have the best bathhouses. So I'd sort of, you know, explored them when I was living in New York. And so now here I was in San Francisco. And actually, it was only in the last, I suppose, 10 years that I realized that I had met my virus when I was in San Francisco. And of course, that would make sense because I got my diagnosis in October 82 and I was in San Francisco in February 81.
Right.
So it all very neatly kind of sort of held. Anyway, so I got this diagnosis. I was living in the East End and I decided that sort of, I didn't tell anyone. I was sort of, you know, just, I cut myself off. But I was really kind of sort of desperate. I mean, it was crazy. There was such kind of, such bleak and dark days. And in the December of that year, I decided that I was hearing stuff. And you have to remember that, you know, there were no computers as such. There were no mobile phones, but one was getting sort of information from people. You know, I would have phone calls with sort of friends in the state so that one was not completely sort of cut off. And I was hearing just, you know, what horrendous times that people were having. And I thought, I can't deal with this. Mm. And decided that I was going to commit suicide.
Wow.
Anyway, sort of, I got everything prepared. I was going to do it the Roman way, you know, oh, run right. A hot bath and slit my wrist. But I tell you, the voice of my mother, you know, came to me, Golda, and she said, Jonathan, you know, you've always been brought up to clear up your own mess. You know, by you committing suicide, you are going to leave one hell of a mess for your friends to clear up. So that was it. I simply couldn't do it. But of course, if you can't do it, what's your other option? You've got to get on and live. But, you know, that's difficult. Mm. I have this killer virus coursing through my veins. Mm-hmm. Who's going to want to sort of know me? You know, it's like you're the modern day leper.
Yeah.
You know, you're an absolute pariah.
Yeah.
So that was that. And I used to sort of want to be with people. So I would go off to the various pubs and bars. And I remember one day I sort of picked up a newspaper. It was Capital Gay. And in it, there was this tiny little sort of advertisement. Gays for a nuclear-free future are running a coach from Gays the Word on the 1st of April 1983 to go to a stand together around Greenham Common, the women's camp and the American air base, Burfield and Aldermaston, which were the two nuclear establishments. And it was about a sort of, you know, a 10-kilometre circle. So I thought, all right, this is going to be my re-entry into society. So I remember girding my loins and heading off. I was living in Shadwell, so I got the tube to Russell Square. And I remember arriving at Russell Square, and I could see the coach up on Marchmont Street outside Gays the Word. And I was about to turn on my heels and flee. And this voice suddenly says, "Hello, my name's Nigel. What's yours?" Popped in my tracks, and I turn round, and there is this young man who's wearing ochre and crimson pantaloons. He's got green Wellington boots, a Fair Isle singlet, and this mop of black curly hair. And that was Nigel Young. And we spent the whole of the day together, and we're just chatting, and it was amazing. And that absolutely turned my life around. I mean, I've had such good fortune. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we did this stand together. It was fantastic. There must have been over 100,000 people all holding hands just to encircle these three establishments. And at the end of the day, I mean, I didn't think I'd know anybody on it. Mm-hmm. But actually, I knew Noel Gregg, who sort of had created a gay sweatshop with a number of other people. He was on it. And at the end of the day, he invited everybody back to his squat in West Hampstead for a party. So we parted, and Nigel and I are still chatting away and what have you. And so the next day I said to Nigel, "Why don't you come over to my place in the East End, Shadwell." So the next day he did, and he came along with a bunch of anemones and two jam donuts. Fabulous. I'm giving tea, he brings everything. Anyway, he says to me, "Look, you're living out in the East End, isolated. I've been living in North London, but I know of a squat in Brixton. Why don't we move in together?"
Wow.
So sort of, you know, that was amazing. And what was really amazing was the fact that I had a roof over my head. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. one of the really important things, you know, you're living with this virus mm-hmm. is to at least have somewhere that you can call home.
Yes.
Well, I certainly need it, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but I think anybody that needs it, you know, that at least, you know, you have got a roof over your head.
So that was part one of Sue's interview with Jonathan Blake. And we've got the rest of the interview coming up in a couple of weeks' time, so we'll keep you posted about that.
HIVR is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
Hey there, it's Tony. I'm just doing a quick story for World AIDS Day regarding a Bristol mum who shares what everyone should know about living with HIV. 4 years ago, this Emily was diagnosed with HIV during a routine checkup at a sexual health clinic. There she thought, you know, what has she done? Well, I've messed up big time. And she felt, reads like she had disgust with herself and shame. And she said that was tremendous feeling of shame that she felt. Also, her thought was, imagine feeling ashamed for having sex with your partner and know that this is something they will stay with forever. Since getting the positive diagnosis the HIV doesn't impact her daily life. If anything, it's allowed her to improve her life by being resilient and making the most and meeting brilliant people along the way. As we know in the HIV hour, there is so much stigma around regarding HIV diagnosis, HIV care, etc. And also the U equals U is possible, which means once you're on effective treatment, undetectable equals untransmittable, which means you can actually have, as long as you're on a good regime and your blood work comes back, you know, undetectable, it means it's untransmittable, so you can't transmit it to your sexual partner. Go back 30 years and the only treatment available was AZT, which made a lot of people sick, worse than they already were, along with another cocktail of other drugs to relieve the nasty side effects. Emily explains in her piece that she only takes 2 pills a day and has no side effects at all, has 2 checkups every year, and that is it. She's actually got one child. And she said the common misconception around the virus, such as thinking HIV and AIDS is the same, but in fact, that is not the case anymore, thanks to treatment. The HIV virus damages the cells of the immune system and weakens the body's ability to fight everyday infections and diseases. The 32-year-old then continues, AIDS is no longer seen here in the UK because the treatment is so effective. I'm really lucky to be alive these days. She also goes on to say, I also think that in the UK people still associate HIV with gay men. Again, this is not the case. HIV does not discriminate. It doesn't care about your gender, background, sexual orientation, etc. A body is a body. Emily also said she felt there was still stigma about having HIV, adding there was no stigma. If there was no stigma, people wouldn't need to ask, where did you get it? Or was it from a blood transfusion? Until we live in a society where sex is a practice that is normal and healthy, then it will always be stigmatic. She said also she shouldn't matter where I got it. She also goes on to say in this article, which was amazing, it's actually in the Bristol Post, let me tell you something. You don't have symptoms from HIV. You may not have an indication that it's there for 15 years. It's a silent virus. Unless you have a test, you don't know it's there. Emily is now a peer mentor for Bristol's Brigstow, a charity which supports people living with HIV. She said she didn't keep the fact that she has HIV secret and that she was open about her status because she was once someone that believed it wouldn't happen to her. She said as a heterosexual woman, she belonged to a low-risk group and that tests for HIV was optional. But it did happen to me, she continued. And look at the positive implications of me being responsible for my own health. Now I can't pass it on. Her son was born through natural delivery and he is negative. And that is incredible. The piece also goes on about myths surrounded about HIV getting busted. The HIV and AIDS are in fact 2 separate things. HIV is a virus which can be transmitted and AIDS is a syndrome which is acquired through time and without medical treatment. Therefore, you can't catch AIDS due to medical advancements and treatment. Is rare for someone to be diagnosed with AIDS in the UK, and if there is, it can be reversed. Also, anyone can be diagnosed with HIV. 1/3 of people living with HIV in the UK are women. The percentage of people who acquired HIV through heterosexual sex and sex with men is the same, 45% each. HIV rates in gay, bisexual and other men who have sex with men who are continuing to decrease year on year, which is amazing. Also, she goes on about, Brigstow is a wonderful charity with wonderful people. They helped me to find my confidence again after diagnosis. They taught me all about HIV. They supported her from the start, really, which is why she gives as much time as she can for them. And this is amazing. She's happy and proud, and she's a very happy mother. World AIDS Day is again internationally on the December the 1st every year since 1988. Brigstow said it aims to remind everyone with HIV has not gone away, and that there is a vital need to increase awareness, reduce stigma and raise vital funds. That's an amazing story, and we from the HIV Hour wish Emily every success in the future.
We have again the wonderful Martin Harris from the Terence Higgins Trust. He's going to be talking to you about World AIDS Day, what we're all sort of focusing on at the moment, a very different World AIDS Day this year. So I'm going to introduce Martin, and he's going to tell us a bit more what he's going to be talking about. Hi, Martin.
Hi, Sue. How are you?
I'm fine. A very different year this year for World AIDS Day, isn't it, Martin?
Yeah, lots of things, lots of fundraising this year going online and virtually rather than face to face and in venues. So, yeah, we couldn't predict a lockdown, but yeah, very different, unique year this for us.
And I think we're all in it together, as one would say, as in all the, you know, all the HIV charities and all the, well, if we think about all the other charities around the country, you know, we've just had the Poppy Day, we've just had the Children in Need. Again, very, very different, very, very different for across the country, would you say?
Yeah, definitely. I think all charities have had to look this year to sort of be a bit more creative and inventive and how they can sort of fundraise in the new environment. So, yeah, Poppy Day people out there with their contactless rather than in cash and things like that. Mm. And a lot more events being held over Zoom and quizzes, yes, and bits and pieces like that. So, yeah, gosh, very, very interesting.
So just Martin, just remind our listeners, obviously, what your role is at the Terence Higgins Trust.
Yeah, so I joined in February before lockdown, and I belong to the community fundraising team. So we're looking after all the supporters out there doing things like bake sales, quizzes, going off and running the London Marathon for us, holding tribute nights and things like that. So all the general public are doing all these great bits and pieces for us.
And it's so important, especially for local, you know, obviously we're talking about Brighton as well, which we have, you know, a great following with the Terence Higgins Trust in Brighton. And it's just perhaps trying to do even the smallest things to make a difference.
Yeah, so I know our office down in Brighton would normally every year be working with the venues, which unfortunately will be closed due to lockdown.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, I mean, whatever people raise, whether that's a tenner or £100 or £1,000, mm-hmm, I think it's all very gratefully received. So we appreciate that people want to help. And maybe this year it's not as easy to fundraise, but whatever people can do, it's still very gratefully received. Mm.
And I think, would you agree? I think it's World AIDS Day, yes, it is one of the biggest fundraising events of the year for the Terence Higgins Trust. But it's also a moment where we, and some people actually don't really understand this or know that, you know, nearly 38 million people across the globe, across the world, have lost their lives to HIV and AIDS. I mean, that's a staggering amount of people. And then we're looking at 37.5 million people that are actually living around the world with HIV and AIDS. And it's a time where, you know, we commemorate and celebrate and think about who we've lost, but also what we've achieved over the decades of when we first had the, you know, when it first was seen as the AIDS epidemics quite some years ago. And even just to, you know, if you can get hold of one of those red ribbon or just, you know, do something for £10, that would be making a difference, surely.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's just it's a milestone day in our calendar, isn't it, for all HIV yeah. charities, that we can, like as you say, for some people, it's a chance to think back and remember a loved one that was sadly lost maybe in the earlier days when medication didn't work mm-hmm. for us. There's people that stop and think of World AIDS Day about the stigma if they're living with HIV today. And there's some people that it's an opportunity to look to the future and sure, end in sure. transmission. So I think it's a very personal time mm. and lots of people will think of that day for very different reasons as why it's important.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So how can people get involved? How can, even on the littlest bit, how can people get involved this year?
So we've got lots of different things going on and they're all on our website, but a couple of things that we've got going on. On the 1st of December, we've got Charlie Hyde from RuPaul's Drag Race doing a virtual on Zoom bingo show for us. So that right. should be fun. So people can grab a bingo card for free. There's no cost to play for that. So if they go to our website, they can get a bingo card to play along that. We've got a dedication wall this year, so people can take a photo of themselves wearing their red ribbon. They can post a photo on the dedication wall and really? Leave a few leave a few messages there as to what World AIDS Day means to them, which is really mm-hmm. nice. And some people have already started mm-hmm. to put photos up and messages, which is really nice. And then mm-hmm. this year we've also had this idea of people going off and doing a ribbon walk. So we've had some people sign up because we thought, well, what's kind of lockdown and COVID friendly? So to yes. go outside is part of your daily exercise is you can go out maybe on yeah. the 1st of December or maybe any day in December, what works for you. And some people have been plotting out routes which will trace a ribbon over their neighbourhood. So we've had one of our volunteers who works on our helpline, THT Direct, but he's produced a really lovely walk which goes across London and it stops off at 15 different historic places of interest related to HIV.
Oh, how amazing.
Yeah, so he's got a little team together and they actually raised a hell of a lot of money, actually. I think that's about £1,400. So.
Wow.
But even to go out on your own and just maybe yep. do a little walk, and mm-hmm. if you're feeling adventurous, try and plot a little ribbon route if you can. But if not, yeah. It's just a nice little way to go out and enjoy some fresh air and get outside the house.
Yeah, no, definitely. And if we can sort of raise a little bit something for our, for communities and. In a very difficult, it has been and still is a very difficult and challenging year. And even like you said, Martin, that little bit of difference is going to make a big difference.
Yeah. Could you imagine if every single one of the listeners went off and just raised £5 or £10? That'd be incredible, wouldn't it? So I think sometimes we get focused on, we've got to go and raise like big amounts, but no. It's all the little bits that add up and make a big difference. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else you want to sort of, because obviously we're hopefully, listeners are, listening and thinking they want to do something, perhaps but they'd like to do something.
We've got people shaving their hair off for us. We've got people dyeing their hair red.
Right.
We've got some people that have contacted us and they're going to do some quizzes over sort of the weekend beforehand. So we've got some downloadable quizzes on our website as well. One is an LGBT quiz and one is a girl bands quiz. But some people doing some stuff online. And it's also kind of what's people's interests, really, because it's obviously nice to have ideas. But people might think, well, actually, what's my interest? What would I like to do? What's going to motivate me, really? So, if people go to our website, which is www.tht.org.uk, or just Google Terence Higgins Trust. As soon as you land on our page, there's a big red ribbon if you click on that. And also people can still order a free red ribbon from our website in the run-up to there as well. So,
Martin, as always, thank you so much for coming on the HIV Hour. And good luck with all the fundraising for an amazing course. And I hope people get out and do even that little bit of something to help and support people living with HIV and for an amazing course. Yeah, so thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much.
Radio Reverb.
So I am welcome back to the HIV Hour. I've got pleasure to introduce Glenn Stevens, who's he's been on the show before. I think it was last World AIDS Day. He's involved in a project called More to You Than HIV, which is a local project. How are you doing, Glenn?
I'm very well, thank you, Josh. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Good to have you on the show again.
Thanks for inviting us back.
So can you tell us a bit about the project More to Me Than Next, shall we?
Certainly. So, as you mentioned, it's called this product's called More to Me Than HIV, and it was building on from a project I did last year for World AIDS Day at Jubilee Library. It is a visual event, and the thinking behind that was that if HIV is not on your radar and you saw those three letters, then you may not be drawn to the project. Or for people of my generation, the very mention of HIV takes a lot of people back to the government's 1980s AIDS campaign, which was filled with tombstones and icebergs, which were terrifying and doom-laden. But those images and the message about HIV is now very outdated. So that is what I wanted to tackle. And as part of last year's exhibition, we had the AIDS Memorial Hanky Quilt, which is now this year being displayed at the Sussex Beacon Shop window in St James Street. We also had a replica of the Brighton AIDS Memorial Tay, which was created by Romany Mark Bruce, and a World AIDS Day video installation created by one of the members of this year's project, David Frey. I also gathered a collection, a cross-section of people living with HIV to come and talk at Jubilee Library last year. And one of the speakers was your colleague from the HIVR and Positive Voices advocate, Sue Mason.
Our Sue.
But it was Sue. He gave the talk to the group, and she spoke so eloquently about her being open about HIV, her HIV status.
Yeah.
Was really helpful in breaking down HIV stigma. And that's what we wanted to do with this year's World AIDS Day project. So last year from January, I put together a creative team of people together. I'd like to give a quick shout out to David, Francis, Ian, Jason and Malcolm, who collectively have helped shape this year's project, More to Me Than HIV. And the idea behind the project is simple. We put out a call for all those living with HIV to send us three images. One, a portrait of themselves, and two other images that represent a side of themselves beyond their HIV status, and three positive words to accompany the images. So, for example, I have my portrait alongside an image to represent myself as a writer, and a picture of my tattoos, along with three words, which were determined, writer, and inked. Now, so far, we have had 18 HIV positive people submitting their images and words, and the team behind More to Me Than HIV would like to thank them and hope that other people living with HIV will take strength from this project and feel that they can be more open about their HIV status, as collectively we can break down the HIV stigma.
Yeah.
So at the beginning of the year, we planned on a team member, Malcolm, to professionally reshoot a selection of portraits. And then they would be displayed at Jubilee, Hove Library and a selection of branch libraries across the city as well. I had our team member, Francis, secured funds from the Community Police Fund so we could have the portraits professionally printed. But unfortunately, COVID-19 came along and scuppered all our plans, really.
Yeah.
So we had to postpone that part of the project. And we have the event this year completely online, which David has done a fantastic job on, in not only creating a brilliant website for More to Me Than HIV. So throughout the year, we have been shaping up the project. We've always making contributions to our Facebook page and having articles printed in GScene, you know, keeping the public up to date on the progress.
Just, it's getting the message out there, isn't it? And
absolutely.
Yeah. And I think in these times of virtual stuff, I think it's great to do that. And yes, absolutely. Are people, some people are a bit frightened to, because you show your face, don't you? And you have a portrait.
Well, we knew this was going to be a challenge for people, but by the work Sue does with the Positive Voices, into schools and places to talk just about, like, this is it. The narrative has changed on HIV, and we were so grateful to the people who submitted their images for the project at the beginning, because, like I say, we knew it's a big ask, So essentially for people to come out living, to say that they're living with an HIV positive diagnosis.
Yeah.
And as I said earlier, if HIV is not on your radar, then you may be not you've been unaware of the huge advances that have been made in combating the spread of HIV. So like one of the big campaigns we talk about on the website is You Equals You, which stands for undetectable equals untransmittable. Now, we have an extremely effective antiretroviral medication, which when taken correctly every day, suppresses HIV to such a degree that it is impossible to pass HIV on to your partner. This is a really big game changer, and though our project More to Me Than HIV, we hope to play our part in changing the narrative of what it means to live with an HIV positive diagnosis.
And it, as you say, it doesn't define you either, doesn't it? And I think early days it did, it felt like it defined you, and now it's not like that at all, is it?
Not at all, no. And I mean, HIV does have can throw up a lot of problems,
yeah.
But like stigma shouldn't be one of them.
Absolutely.
We need to stamp that out, because if people are afraid of taking an HIV test, then they can't go on the treatment and they can't carry on living effectively. Getting on with their lives, really. So we want to just change that.
Fabulous. Is that the end of the project?
No. As we didn't have the photo exhibition at Jubilee Library this year for World AIDS Day, we're continuing the project. And we'll have the exhibition at the libraries for World AIDS Day 2021. So with this in mind, we are really keen to continue reaching out to people living with HIV, submit their images and free words. We're particularly keen for people from the BAME community and trans community to submit their images to show the diversity of HIV community. You don't have to live in Brighton to take part in a project. So if you're living with HIV and would like to take part in a project and help break down HIV stigma, then please visit our website, moretomethanhiv.life.
Great. And so obviously this year's World AIDS Day is going to be different. What's going on in Brighton? Can you tell us?
Yeah, so it's very different, unfortunately. So we won't be able to have the vigil at the New Steen Gardens. So the reading of the names that can't take place. But individuals can visit the memorial, Tay Memorial, throughout the day, allowing people to pay their respects. And then we'll have there's an online event being organised. So there'll be speeches by local MPs, councillors, representatives from the local HIV organisations, and these will all be uploaded on the Brighton and Hove World AIDS Day Facebook page.
Yep,
throughout the day on December the 1st. The Facebook page is World AIDS Day BH, or just search for World AIDS Day Brighton and Hove and you will get there. And the reading in the names, which is such an important part of World AIDS Day for all of us, that's going to take place at 6 p.m. On the Facebook page, and also on Latest TV. They'll be running it at the same time at 6 p.m. And the reading in the names will be on the page for a couple of hours, and then that will come off.
That sounds fantastic. Yeah, it's
very important.
Yeah, very important.
Please, if you'd like to get involved with the project, we'll be happy for all the details you need to about the project are on our website. Please submit your photos. We'll be then, like I said, we're running in the project again for World AIDS Day 2021.
That's it for this week. That went quick.
Yes, it did, and I just thought it might just be nice just for a couple of moments, because we are commemorating one of the biggest events of the year, World AIDS Day. 38 million people are still living with HIV and AIDS around the world, and 37.5 million people have actually lost their lives to HIV and AIDS around the world. Mm. And I just thought it'd be nice if we, as presenters, we just mark World AIDS Day ourselves with perhaps a few moments on what World AIDS Day means. Tony, what does it mean to you?
Kind of strength, and it means that we've lost so many people, but we've still got so many people fighting for their lives. And I think it's just that moment in time where we have to think about others instead of just us as little islands. So
yes,
yeah, just strength, really.
Mm-hmm. What about yourself, Josh?
Same as what Tony said, actually. I think it's just remembering people who've lost, but also who are here now. And also the togetherness. I mean, over the last few months, we have had to live separately.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
This kind of thing brings people together, but it's going to be in a different way. So, yeah. That's my thoughts.
And I would just like to end on, and not that I don't think about a partner that I did actually lose to HIV, but I just want to mention him and to say that if it wasn't had been for my ex-partner coming forward to tell me to go and get a test, I might not be here today, surviving nearly 15 years, living extremely well. A piece of my heart always goes out to him on World AIDS Day, and for the courage and the strength he must have had to knock on my door that day. So I just want to, and it doesn't mean quite a bit to me, a World AIDS. Not that I don't think about him, but that extra moment.
HIVR is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.